Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Songs. Shut up.
Guy led too, babe.
Thomas aged mysteriously 20 years and is now wearing glasses. Oh, but he's under pressure. Come on, sweating. Anyway, sing some football songs between yourselves, I'm sure you know. So, just watch what's going on here. Fucking learn something here. This happens. It's not all glamour. Fucking cocaine and prostitutes. Some work has to get done. Not by me, you see. I'll see Chris. Where's Chris? He's at the bar. Now, I'm no expert, but I'm kind of thinking he's just been for a piss. That's what's happening there. There was fuck all over the drums. All right, carry on. I was just about to give this song a big build-up then. I said there was fucking no one there. Okay, anyway.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. This is episode 49 and we've got a fantastic interview coming up for you in a bit, which is with a chap called Adrian Connerboy and his wife Roz. And yeah, as we get into in the interview, it's they're people that got in touch with me initially because they've got a really interesting story to tell. And it's another one of these sort of Oasis changed my life stories, but they really did. It really did change his life in a big way. So, yeah, I don't want to give the giveaway what happens. But, yeah, make sure you check this out because it's a really, really good episode. And it was really lovely to meet the guys on a beautiful sunny day in Oxford. One thing I wanted to point out is that the voting is now open for the British Podcast Awards, Listener's Choice Awards for their listener's favourite podcast. So, yeah, if you follow me on social media, you'll see it's my sort of pinned tweet on Twitter. The address is BritishPodcastAwards.com. If you just head over there and then go to vote for the Listener's Choice Awards, there's a search for the podcast box. You just add in the Oasis podcast in there. There's hundreds of bloody podcasts that have got Oasis in the title, like the Meditation Oasis and some like Oasis churches and things like that. That's not me. Look for the one with the with the rip-off Brian Cannon Oasis classic logo, but then with the word podcast underneath it. And that's the one. So if you can vote for me there, I'd greatly appreciate it. These are open to everyone, whether it's professional podcasts, BBC ones. Adam Buxton won the award last year, so I don't think I've got any chance of winning at all. But as I say, if everyone wouldn't mind heading over there and voting for me, I would really greatly appreciate it. I did put myself forward for a couple of categories, but wasn't nominated. A couple of people that were nominated in those categories is Edith Bowman's podcast and Michael Portillo's podcast, which is quite interesting that, you know, personally, I think podcasting is more about the amateurs and more about helping people who don't have huge corporations behind them and big media careers in the background. But, you know, are the British Podcast Awards, is that are the judges choosing the podcast because they are actually the best, or that, you know, they might get a famous person to come along and maybe a bit easier to sell advertising and get more publicity for them? Who knows? Could be I'm just bitter because I didn't get nominated, but there you go. But hey, if you wouldn't mind, as I say, heading over to britishpodcastawards.com and then vote for the Oasis podcast in the Listener's Choice Awards, it would be greatly appreciated. So let's have a little bit of news. If you remember back last year when the Who Built the Moon was sort of first coming out and the first couple of singles, a few bits of this sort of documentary came out. And that sort of mini documentary has come out now, which is available on there online. So let's have a little bit of that here.
There's a load of geezers dressed in parkas who want you to carry on doing what it is they kind of missed out on. And it's an amazing thing when you see a next generation of Oasis fans and all that. And I respect that. And when I'm out and I'm touring, I play old stuff, you know, what I think they would like to hear. But when I go in the studio, I don't give a fuck what they want. I never gave a fuck.
That's quite interesting. That, I mean, a lot of this was still being recorded back in the back in 2017, so it's not the sort of up to date, really. So but anyway, that's good to hear. In Liam social media news, he posted something I didn't really appreciate, really, which was a screen grab of what looks like a text exchange between Noel and Anais. And it's still going back to that thing about Noel not turning up and playing the One Love Manchester gig, and then sort of saying that, you know, the excuse for not doing it, and I just don't like it. As I've sort of said on the episode the other day, I really don't particularly enjoy that. You know, I love Liam, I love the banter between them, but yeah, when it gets into that nasty sort of family stuff, he said, she said, it's like EastEnders. I can't be doing with it. I can't be. If that was relatives of mine doing that sort of stuff on Facebook, I'd probably unfriend them or whatever. So yeah. But hey, you know, it is what it is. I just sort of let it. I don't focus too much on it and just sort of move on and enjoy everything else. The High Flying Birds have carried on playing. They've been playing gigs in Germany and Amsterdam. And that clip you heard at the start of the episode, that was. Yeah, I thought it was quite funny, quite entertaining there. That, you know, that's one of the things, one of the things that really sets Noel apart from Liam is that he does, you know, he is a raconteur. He'll be able to just do that, entertain the crowd for a bit. And it is, you know, you could imagine going to see him do like a stand-up show or something. He is fantastic at that, very professional. I thought that was really good fun. Meanwhile, Liam we haven't heard much of, but what we did find out last week via a sort of series of tweets was that he was heading over to LA to do some more recording. So it may well be that that is what is happening right now. So we don't know for definite, but yeah, new music from Liam. Let's hope so, because if it's as good as you were, if not better, then we're in for an absolute treat. Now, one of the gigs that Liam has done was at a festival called Snowbombing 2018. And my guest from a couple of weeks ago, Cynthia, was there. And she was hanging around before the show and sort of up in the mountains there, because it's like a snowboarding festival. And she just happened to be doing a bit of recording. And lo and behold, she started hearing a voice coming across the mountains. And it was Liam. And he was sound checking Paper Crown. which sounded really cool. So let's have a little bit of that.
So I just stumbled across soundcheck. It's Liam singing. Paper Crown. That took me a while. How beautiful is this, though?
So Cynthia posted that, and it went quite viral, actually. It sort of got quite a few likes and retweets. I think her one was up to about 1,000 likes and 200 or 300 retweets. And then also it had been posted by a couple of the other big fan sites, mainly Oasis and Oasis Mania, which and their versions were getting a couple of thousand likes and retweets as well. So really cool to see. You know, what a, just one of those magic little moments. Had a nice message come through from Luis from Brazil. So let's have a bit of that.
Hello, James. Luis speaking here from Brazil. Just wanted to say that I love the podcast. I think it's great. Keep up the good work. And also that I've been to Leon's concert here in Brazil last month on Lollapalooza. It was great. Leon's amazing. But underneath my skin, there's a fire within. It was a little bit disappointing because of the short set list. He didn't play Slide Away, he didn't play Here Now. He had a solo gig here, but he canceled it because of his throat. So the gig was great on Lollapalooza, but I think the solo gig would be biblical. And I got a little bit jealous of Argentina because he did a solo gig in Argentina and it looked amazing. They seem to have this connection with Argentina. Lee and Noel, they have this classic picture with Maradona. But they also have a massive fan base here in Brazil. And every time they come to play here, it's great. People go crazy and hope they come back soon. No, with his new tour. And beyond that, I would like to ask you, or if someone who listens to the podcast knows, because I've been to Manchester and I've been to Liverpool, and in Liverpool they have the Beatles tour and the Beatles museum and things like that. But in Manchester, so I've been there and 2011, but I think they don't have an Oasis tour or Manchester Music tour where you can see things about Oasis and Smiths and the Stone Roses, and I think that would be great. That would be something that would attract a lot of people, because you know, people from all around the world love Manchester music. So, is there something like that, or there's ever been something like that? I think that that's a good thing to talk about. I am a little bit curious about that. I want to come back to Manchester, to the UK, and to Liverpool, and you know, London, and all the places, but especially Manchester. And I want to go to the places. I don't know if in the early songs, I never read anything about that, but I don't know if in the early songs they have a lot of reference about Manchester, places in Manchester, but in spite of that, they have a history there, and I know I would like to see that, and I think a lot of people like to see that. So, do you know something about that, or does anyone who listens to the podcast knows if there's some tourist attraction, you know, for people who go to Manchester because of Oasis. So this is my first message, but I hope to send other ones. I hope to keep in touch with the community of Oasis fans from all around the world. I want to thank you for the opportunity with the podcast. And as you are, cheers.
Thanks for that, Luis. Much appreciated. Really great to hear from you, and please do stay in touch. It's strange, isn't it? This sort of amazing reception that the guys seem to get in Argentina. What is it about Argentina that means so much to them? And that point that Louise made about the Manchester Music Guide, yes, there was one a few years ago being run by Craig Gill from the Inspiral Carpets, who tragically died a few years ago. So I looked it up following Louise's question, and yeah, it looks like they're, the last thing I saw was an article from last year, sort of from his family, Craig Gill's family, saying they were going to set these back up again, and to, you know, and if people are interested to go on that music tour for them to get in touch. So yeah, if you are a from overseas or from local actually, and want to do the Manchester music tour and touch on the Oasis places and the places related to the Smiths and Stone Roses, then absolutely, I'll put the link below in the description to that last article, because I think that's got an email address contact. So yeah, check that out. And also, if you remember, Carl Cotter, one of our contributors, done a series of articles on the website on the patreon.com/OasisPod page of sort of places to visit related to Oasis. So I'll also put a little link to that, because he did a piece about Manchester as well that just covered off some of those important places in Oasis history. So without any further ado, let's move on to this interview with Adrian. Stay tuned after this, because then we're also going to do the Oasis A to Z of our next track, which is Ain't Got Nothing. So that'll be good to get to. But first off, after this brief musical interlude, it's me talking to Adrian and Roz. Talking to the songbird yesterday, flew into a place not far away. She's a little pilot in my mind, singing songs of love to pass the time. Gonna write a song so she can see, give her all the love she gives to me. Talk of better days that have yet to come. Never felt this love from anyone. Alright, so we're sitting out in the gorgeous sunshine, which has been fantastic, because what, we're almost in bloody May, and it's just been a nightmare in this country. But yeah, now we're in beautiful sunshine, sitting in Oxford in the Westgate Centre, and I'm joined by Adrian and Roz. How are you doing, guys? You all right?
Not bad, not
good,
bad.
Good. So, Adrian, you got in touch on email, because I was expecting, when I came to you, I was expecting like a Midwestern American accent, because I knew you've been seeing Noel in Chicago, and that's how you got in touch. But
yeah,
you haven't got a Midwestern American accent, have
no,
you?
No, I'm from London originally, and okay, I've been out in the States from since 2010.
Yeah.
Drink break.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. So I got a job working for Rebel New York, coaching in their academy. So I was a soccer coach. My friends all dig me out.
Football coach.
Yeah, football coach. So I'd done that for a couple of years, and I loved it. Loved living in New York, and met my wife now. I've always been a massive Oasis fan since 94. I think we had, me and my brother had a Now album.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think Whatever was a Christmas single when...
December 94.
Yeah, so we heard of that before, definitely, maybe, and then...
Seems to me, you only see what people want you to
then, you know, just they blow it up, like, 95, 96, 97, it was amazing.
So when were you born then? How old were you?
81.
81, okay.
Yeah.
So you're like 13, 14 when whatever comes out.
Yeah. So it was like, I was just getting into music. And that, from that, I was learning, my uncle, Paddy, he got me a guitar and whatnot, like, you know, I learned Wonderwall, whatever, like, you know, it's easy.
Well, like we said that on the podcast a few times, it's like, yeah, what Noel did, especially with the style he does, with the two fingers staying still.
Two fingers, yeah.
We need to get a style for that. I think if you call it the two finger style, that sounds a bit rude. Yeah. So I think we need to.
I had a game actually on my computer, like, I don't know what it's called, but you can learn to play Oasis. It was like, it was set like it. The image of it was Main Road and whatnot. Like,
oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I'd have to find out.
Was it a PC game?
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't remember that.
Yeah. I mean, this is way back, yeah.
Are you sure you didn't dream that?
No. It was like, I think you could learn Morning Glory. Like, yeah, they had a couple of songs, but... from that... just going to see them live, like, it was a game changer. Like Nebworth,
you were at Nebworth,
yeah. Which? Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah.
That wasn't as good as Saturday when I was there.
And then, you know, like, I remember Be Here Now when it come out, and it was actually the same day of my GCSE results.
Oh wow, fantastic!
So that was like my GCSEs was like irrelevant.
Whatever.
I remember staying up like late the night before and watched the BBC documentary.
Yes.
And I was just like baffled by it. It was such such hype around that album.
Yeah.
You know what it was like, and then I remember like queuing up in Virgin Megastore like in Harrow, and I was like literally. I think I was like fifth in the queue with my friends and whatnot. Like, so yeah, and then I went to see Earl's Court, the Be Here Now tour.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
they were playing, I think, three nights.
Yeah.
I think I went on the Thursday, and then I went to the Be Here Now tour at Wembley Arena for two nights as well. I went on. Thursday, and I can't remember exactly the days, but I queued up from 3 a.m. Outside Wembley Arena to get tickets, and it was just full of touts, and it was
someone else did that. I think it was Richard Bowes did that. I think in the interview I did with him, I think he queued up at like 3 a.m. for those tickets.
Yeah, with my brother, and we didn't have much money at the time, and we were in the queue for like 3 hours, and we were like, it just came into my head, and I was like, why am I queuing up to go see him one night? And I just literally jumped at the barriers, and he held me a spot, and then I ran to the cash machine and bought two more tickets.
Oh, okay.
And then I went to see like Supergrass with the support.
Yeah.
So that was, that was great. And then, they went away after that, like, yeah, for, you know, after the Be Here Now tour, and then
yeah,
I got into them again when Sander on the Shoulders of Giants was released. I went to see them in Barcelona, and it didn't happen. So we went out for a weekend. It was the weekend of the FA Cup final, and so we went out, and me and my two friends.
Hello.
Hey.
That's me, thank you.
And
Lotta.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Did you order already?
I think we're okay. Thanks
for doing
just now.
All right.
Thank you.
So Barcelona.
Barcelona. So we went out in Barcelona. Actually, we went to the Barcelona game on the Friday night. They were playing on Friday night. I think Barcelona, Celta Vigo. And then the FA Cup final was on the Saturday, and we just on the piss basically, in an Irish bar, you know, classic Brits abroad.
Yeah.
And then we crashed out on in our hotel, and we woke up and we were like, "Fuck!" Like the gig's in an hour, like, and we were like running out outside to get a cab and whatnot. And I remember really well, like distinctly, going to the gig, and we were like, why is all these people walking away? Like, it was like, and we were like, no. And then we walked up to the show and we had said, the gig's been cancelled, Alan White is tendonitis. But that was a lie. Like, it was, they had an argument.
Had a falling out, yeah.
I think that was one of their biggest falling out, Barcelona. So that was, we were fuming at the time, but we were like, what it is. But we went to Dublin a month later to watch them in Lansdowne Road, and that was good, really good night.
I thought you were going to say that was the one where Noel ended up doing lead vocals, but no, that was a proper.
That
was the point, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, Lansdowne Road was again like Supergrass was the support, I think. That was a good gig. We were sitting down though. That was the first time I've sat at an Oasis gig, but you didn't really sit, but like it was like the Lansdowne Road had a railway track running around. It's really strange. Yeah. So we went there and forgive them for Barcelona, and and then I'd done two nights at Wembley Stadium. I went on the Friday and the Saturday because I live in Wembley,
was this the 2000 Millions?
So the Friday night was amazing, but I didn't really know, like a lot of my friends went to the Saturday night, and I included, but it was on Sky One, I think, and I recorded it, and we were like, my mum recorded it actually, and then we didn't know because we were like, hammered at the time, but Liam was just awful that night. Like, his vocals, and he was just chatting gibberish.
Yeah, he's hammered, and he kept having a go at Patsy Kensington.
Yeah,
he just left him.
He kept going into one. Like,
that Noel carry on. Fucking cheeky bunch of bastards. I guess I'll come down there and join you. 8 fucking years and you're not asked.
It's actually 9 years, but he's coming.
It's a really professional, this gig, yeah? Is it? Is it really fucking smash hits? Are we having a good time? Is it really fucking pro? Fucking old now.
Once again, I would like to express my peace and love to everybody in the stadium. Thank you very much again. This is your best time.
Hey. Listen, I dig all you, man. I dig all your offsprings. I dig all your pets. I dig everything. I just don't like shitholes.
I think to millions, like that was, obviously it got made into a DVD and a CD, and that was awesome.
Yeah. Well, we've got Gem and Andy at that point, haven't we? So it did definitely change it up. Whereas, I think Be Here Now tour, was great, and especially Liam's vocals are so good around that time. But then I think it did. I was really excited at the time, like, oh, this is going to be a refresh then, and now we've almost got like a super group because you've got these other guys coming in that are proper musicians and songwriters, and it's going to be So I love to be here now, but it was like, okay, well, maybe it does need a bit of a refresh. And and especially live as well, it did really take it up a notch.
Yeah, like the songs on Standing on the Shoulders, I think that's probably the weakest album, maybe. They were like a super group now at that time, right? So, and then,
And what about going on from there? Did you carry on seeing them in Heathen Chemistry? And
I went to Shepherd's Bush, Royal Albert Hall, City of Manchester Stadium, Finsbury Park for two nights. I think you're going to Finsbury Park.
I'm going to see Liam, Are you going to that?
I'm not going to be here, but I'm going to be, I'll go to see him in New York next month.
Is that with Ashcroft?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
So Central Park, yeah. So it's summer stage, right? Mm-hmm. You've been there. I've never been to Goo there, but it's about 5,000 people, I think. So
brilliant.
I think a lot of Brits will head over that for that.
Well, I think that's the funny thing, because when I have these sort of gig reviews come in from people and stuff, and it's often, you always think, oh, I wonder how Liam's going to go down in X country. But then it's like, well, it's just all expats. So I think most of the time it doesn't make a big difference. I think South America is. I think by the sounds of it, Argentina and Brazil.
I would love to go to see them in Argentina. If Oasis ever reformed, I was thinking that was on the bucket list. Because I've seen the YouTube video of River Plate Stadium, and that sort of looks amazing. The atmosphere. Yeah.
That Don't Look Back in Anger as well. That's maybe the best Don't Look Back in Anger. I think
Noel was even like tearing up a little bit. So you can tell, like, he was like, wow. But it's like in Supersonic when they went to Japan. They were like, what is this? like that must have been so surreal for them.
Yeah, well, that's the thing as well, because they weren't that big, and yet, you know, you never had that kind of Beatlemania kind of thing before.
Yeah.
And suddenly they turn up, get off the airport, and it's like, Beatlemania, what the hell's going on? You know, and like, especially because with Oasis, it had been so quick, and literally 6 months ago, you know, they're nothing. And then suddenly it's like they're being. Yeah.
And pre-internet as well, like pre-like streaming, like, that was amazing. That was best bit of the one of the best bits of the documentary, I thought. But I loved Supersonic.
Brilliant.
It's like walking down memory lane. but some great quotes and one-liners.
It's fantastic. Good. So when did you go off to America then? That was
2010. Yeah.
Okay. And so were you a football player or football coach?
Well, I
here?
Was coaching here, and I got a job offer to coach for the New York Red Bulls, and I went for an interview and I didn't think I'd get the job, and you know, I wound up with a contract, season-long contract, and then I loved it, and then I went back year after year, and like, you know, it was like okay, all of a sudden it's 2018, so I got to see BDI actually in 2011 in Philadelphia.
Oh yeah.
And I actually met Liam. He was really random. So I was on South Street in Philly. If there's any Philly listeners, they were playing in the TLA, and I was walking along to South Street, and he just got out of a car, and he just started smoking and chatting to me, and I was just taken aback.
Did you go up to him and go, "Oh, Liam"?
I was like, "How's it going, Liam?" Like, because it was literally just like, I was like, whoa.
So what were you doing on the street? Were you going?
I was just walking to the gig.
Okay, so this isn't the way to the gig.
Yeah. So, and then he was like, he had a fag for about like 5 minutes, and he was chatting to me like, you know, where are you from, like blah, blah, blah. And he said, "Sounder, enjoy the gig and whatnot." And that's it, he walked in. But it was a very small show. BDI didn't really take off in the States.
No.
Like, they didn't really take off here. So that's the only time I've seen BDI. But I've seen Noel a couple of times in the States in 2011, like the Beacon Theatre. We've seen in Beacon.
Nashville.
Yeah, that was a great gig. Like the Nashville.
Grand Opry.
Yeah, the Grand Opry. Yeah, so that was a really, really good setting to see him. I've got some really good videos of that. And then we've seen him.
Chicago and Radio City.
Yeah, this year.
Radio City Music. Oh, so that's fantastic, because I remember being in touch with Jess and about
you spoke
that.
To her, right?
Yeah. And that was like, that was a big deal for them, because you know, it's such an iconic venue and so famous. Yeah. So, and especially for someone like Jess, who's like, been sort of gigged around doing her own little stuff. She's with the band The Herbalizer for quite a long time, done loads of just a working musician, and then suddenly, you know, to be like playing radio band, music halls, it's like, wow.
Yeah, that's it must be amazing for them.
Yeah.
And the girls bring a lot to the band, actually.
I think so. Yeah, but no, so it's very exciting. I've got my 2 months coming up. I've got, Liam at Finsbury Park, but at first Noel in Cardiff, which would be great. But
That would be awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you got any Oasis friends in Cardiff that you're going to go to gig?
Not really, no. This is with my old... So I've got, like, just my old mates from school. It's just where I live in Didcot. It's just dead easy into the train, into Cardiff. So it's, like, a nice, easy one to get to. We're just kipping over there, and so it'll be a good laugh. But and also, I've been to see, and it's quite a nice symmetry because my first Oasis gig was in Cardiff in March 96. So yeah, so that was sort of the last sort of set of gigs they did before they then went away and then came back for the Nebworth one. So Noel was still doing his acoustic set and things like that.
So
that would be really cool.
That's awesome.
Cool. So when you got in touch, then you sort of mentioned about doing this gig review for us, and then you'd mentioned, like, I always try and encourage people to do a recorded one because it's just better. I will read things out, but I think people just get sick of hearing my voice all the time, and I like to hear everyone else's voices. It's really, really nice. But then you mentioned, like, well, that might be a bit tricky for you because you've got this condition, right? So you just want to tell us a little bit about that condition, how that kind of came about.
Okay, so in August 2016, I had a seizure. So it was I was walking. Well, we went swimming in Manhattan, and we were walking back to our apartment. We didn't have any wallets or phones or whatnot. I had a seizure. I thought I was having a heart attack, and my words started. I was pulsating, and I collapsed, and I didn't black out, but I remember it well. And obviously the ambulance were called and whatnot, and they tested my heart on the ride to the hospital, and my heart was fine. I was like, what happened? Like, it was like just baffling. What happened? I was like 35, you're like quite fit.
Football coach. you'd be pretty fit.
Yeah. So we stayed in the hospital, and they ran loads of tests, and they come back later that night and said, look, you have to stay in overnight. And I said, why? I feel fine. We live like 6 blocks away from the hospital, and they said, look, we found a mass on your brain. And I was like in complete denial, like, until I seen the pictures. I'll show you the picture in a minute. We had a massive argument in the hospital, and
I was like, we're staying. He was like, no, we're not.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest argument we had. So, like, I was like, you don't expect that. When I look back at it now, it's like a dream, right? It's a bad dream, nightmare. So we stayed in, and they run some more tests, and I had to, obviously my family live over here. I had to ring, and my mum and dad were in Ireland at the time, and I spoke to them on the phone, and when I was in hospital, and I had another seizure.
On the phone,
too. On the phone?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, on the phone to my mum, and my mum thought it was like... Oh,
bad signal.
Yeah, so I had another seizure, and, then I was like, okay, something's wrong. Something's not right here.
Okay, fine, you were right, Rules. Yeah, let's stay in there.
Yeah, so basically they booked me in to have the tumour removed 3 days later.
Okay. So it was just this tumour was basically... What, it had been there for years? It was just...
They said it could have been there from birth. From birth. It's baffling to me. And then what happened next, I wasn't really prepared for it because I don't know as much as I know now. About brain tumours or...
Brain surgery.
Oh, you wouldn't, would you? It's not just
I didn't know anyone that had brain surgery, so...
And they were pretty calm in doctor surgery. They were like, you're going to go in, it'll be about 8 hours, we'll remove the tumour, we're going to do brain surgery.
Yeah, so...
okay.
So I was putting on a brave face, but I was, very in denial. And then, obviously, I was in ICU for a couple of days when I when I was straight out of surgery, and then my mum and dad and brother and sister come over, flew over to New York, and I couldn't speak at all. I couldn't communicate, and basically the left side of your brain affects the right side of your body, so I couldn't move my hands. I couldn't I had ACL surgery on a football injury a couple of years ago, and my right side was weakened, and I was walking into my coordination, I was walking into doors. I couldn't really function.
I couldn't write.
Yeah.
And you're a guitar player as well, couldn't play guitar.
Yeah, so if that was, and obviously I couldn't speak or communicate, so I could understand everyone in the room. The doctors would come into every day and say, okay,
what day is it? What year is it? Where are you?
And you're like, I know,
but I can't say
it. You just can't get the words out.
But I can't even write it down. Mm-hmm. Obviously I'm not left-handed, but I couldn't even.
Yeah.
I was so weak after that surgery.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, is it ever going to come back? My speech.
And they can't tell you, like, they're like, could be swelling, could be something we removed, like we take as much of the tumour out as we can, but they don't know how much they've taken of your brain.
How much damage it does. The surgeon, you've done a really good job, but it took a lot to recover from it.
Yeah. And you said before we press record that it's unlike a normal tumour somewhere else where you cut it out. This is more like taking out sand or something, did you say?
Yeah.
It's like picking up sand. So if you imagine you scoop up sand, you get as much as possible, but grains will always fall through your fingers.
Yeah.
And the way that the tumour is made is like star-shaped cells, so they latch into things, like they have tentacles kind of, rather than like, people imagine the tumour is like a gloopy piece of like...
Yeah, like a big round jelly ball or whatever. Yeah.
You know, that you can just scoop it up kind of thing. Brain tumours are very, very complex things.
Okay.
Yeah. So, basically, after a couple of days of not like being like ever to talk, and you know, and it was just.
So you're thinking I'm not ever talking again.
That's I was like, I was doing rehab with stroke victims that couldn't talk at all, and they were like, I was 35, and they were like 75. And I was just like, is this, I couldn't believe it. I was like devastated, like obviously you would be. And and then my brother said, oh, just put some music on, and you know, just to cheer him up. And he said, have you heard, do you know what I mean, the 2016
remastered
Noel Gallagher thing. And I said, I couldn't communicate, but you just put it on. And I remember like listening to the words, and I like, you know, it's a little bit like there's not a long intro into it like the original.
Kicks in a bit quicker, doesn't
it? And then I was like, step off the train all over. And I was like, I could sing it. Like, I was like, that was unbelievable. Like, so I was like singing along to Oasis.
And perfectly.
What?
Yeah.
So you couldn't talk.
Yeah.
But you can sing.
Yeah.
This is a different part of your brain. Finding words is one part, and then your memory and the words that you know, like lyrics and things like that, are a different part.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that was baffling to me, and probably all the surgeons and the doctors as well. Like, they were like, "What is he? What is Oasis? Like, who were they? Like, are they got that song Wonderwall? Like, obviously in an American hospital. Like,
So did you then have to anything that was like?"
The doctors,
you then had to pick songs to express what you wanted to say. So you'd have to like have like 27 different songs and be like, wait, I sing along to this one.
Yeah.
So because what happens when you start to use your, like, it's like a muscle. So the more you start to use it, the brain finds new pathways.
Okay.
And so the doctors were like, just keep him singing.
Keep
this like flow, because that's what it is. It's like, you know, when you're about to faint, you lose your hearing, you lose your, you know, your body shuts down the parts it doesn't need. And when it's recovering, you know, just give it time and give it new pathways and it'll come back. So that's what we did.
Wow. So you were singing in this new hospital.
Yeah, the neighbour weren't impressed. But so funny thing about it was my surgeon, neurosurgeon, was called Dr. Raymond Young. And my brother thought it was so funny, like, to put on Stay Young, like, and sing it to him. And so we were like, And he was like coming into me like, what are you guys like, but
you gotta have a laugh with it, right? Is that the thing? I mean, anyway. Just talking about it, you've sort of been chuckling away, and this, I suppose, did you have to have a laugh about it?
Yeah, you just gotta keep plugging, like, and work out your new normal, and just keep trying. You know,
what was the impact on you, Roz? Were you working over there? Did you have to, like?
Yeah, so I've been in the States since 2009, and my company was like amazing. My boss and like they were really understanding. And obviously I was off work while Adrian was in surgery and
sleeping in the bed,
sleeping
like, next
in like
to
a
me.
Dentist chair next to
me. Oh goodness me.
Like 10 days.
Yeah. Wow.
I think you lost like a stone.
Yeah. It's quite stressful. Good. But we got through it. Stronger for it, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, so obviously I got let out of hospital and a month later obviously we had to wait for
like pathology results on the tumour.
Okay.
Because they look at the tumour and they're like, we think it's this. They know that it's not benign, like they know it's cancerous, but they don't know what grade it is. They don't know like the level of the when it comes to like a tumour, there's like all the different makeup of it, like you know, work on whether it's how dangerous it is kind of thing. So they had to do all the pathology results and everything, and meanwhile Adrian was doing like intensive rehab. So he was doing speech therapy, occupational therapy, like
physical therapy. And that's when I got diagnosed with aphasia. So an aphasia is like obviously where my tumor was, it took out a lot of the brain function of finding my words. So I mean, I thank like every day like that I can able to have a conversation, but if I get tired, I struggle with my words, I slur my words, and you know, when your mind goes blank, and you know, when
brain fart or whatever,
and that basically that's like me every day pretty much. Okay. So some days it's better than others, but it all depends on, you know, like sleep. You know, we've been doing a lot of traveling. Obviously, we're here, and we were in Ireland for the weekend and at a wedding. Got another wedding this weekend, so it's been a hectic trip. But
yeah.
And then after they diagnosed the tumor, we had to start all the treatment that comes with it, and obviously with that comes exhaustion and all the things that make it even harder, but you know, on Adrian. So
no one ever prepares you for, like, you know, for that conversation that you have got brain cancer. You know, we were like, you know, devastated at the time, and I've got like, I had a month off before I started the treatment, so I had I had to recover from the surgery, and I was on steroids at the time, and I was waking up at 3 a.m. I was like completely in a rage, like
roid rage. God, okay. Like,
but I was on a really small dose of steroids, but I just
tried to bring the swelling of the brain down, so they give you steroids, but every drug you take there's another effect.
Has an effect.
So insomnia is one of the lovely side effects of steroids.
Yeah, so that was really, I mean, I wouldn't wish it upon anyone, it was horrible. And then I started, basically I had to do 60 days of radiation to my brain and 60 days of chemo combined. So I actually, it was funny, like, so I went into the radiation and they strap you into a chair.
It's kind of like a giant kind of MRI machine, but they create a mask.
They have to make a mask, yeah.
Okay.
It's like a plastic mesh mask that's exactly the shape of your head, because your brain can't move at all, because they want the radiation to target all the bad cells. Okay. So they're like shooting
it. You've got to stay.
Yeah, you've got to stay
still.
Perfectly still.
So they strap you in, like literally bolt you in, like
a roller coaster or something.
It's like Dr. David Banner, like, you know, like,
and it's radiation as well. So mixed with the roid, you don't end up hulking out.
Like actually they were like playing Oasis for me all the time.
Playlist inside the radio.
So I had like 20 minutes Oasis. Like, I didn't know what tracks were going to be played. So I was like, oh, you know, because when you don't know, it was like, oh, that's good. I was like, so it took my mind off it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the, like, little James, like, on repeat for 20 minutes. You're like, no!
Little James, we're all the same. Always seem to love to.
I can't do anything.
Someone just wanted to wind you up.
Yeah.
Play this again.
Yeah.
Good.
But, all right. So where are you now? What's the situation?
I basically had I had a scan 2 weeks ago, and it's my results were stable. I obviously I'd done 6 months of chemo
after
the 60 days.
Yeah.
So then they double the dose, and you take it for 5 days of the month, and then you have 23 days to recover, and then you start
hit
again.
You again.
Yeah. Okay.
That was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it hits you for the week after as well. Like it takes a couple of days for it to get in your system.
Okay. And are you at home doing this, or is this going? You're going into hospital?
No, luckily I could do it at night, orally. So at night. Orally. So, but you get constipated and puking, and it's not funny. Like.
Well, they make you ill, don't they? Make you really, really ill, kill a bunch of your cells to kill the bad stuff. You know? Yeah, it really hurts the rest of you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Brutal.
Takes its toll.
All right, well, you're here, clearly.
Yeah. I'm here talking to you, so only 18 months ago, so it's like, I've come a long way in a short time, but I have to remind myself, like, you know, it could have been much worse, and you know, I have scans every 12 weeks, and it's touch and go. Every scan is like, okay, it's stable, you're all good for another 12 weeks, but like, it's not a fun way to live your life, and the stress of that scanxiety,
it's a real thing,
I mean,
brutal,
it is brutal,
sleepless nerves,
but
So the doctor's like, keep him singing. So I got on like Google research and found that in New York there's a Britpop choir run by this lady, Charlie. It's amazing, and she puts all the songs together, and she's British. So I emailed her and I was like, any spaces? And she's like, not this cycle, but next. So we joined a Britpop choir. And so like every Monday we go and sing with like, it's probably like 40 of us. And they do, you know, arrangements, and we
Fantastic.
Sing all Britpop. And it's amazing. It's so uplifting. So much fun.
Yeah, we did a version of She's Electric. I think I sent it to you. That was fun, and we've done Pulp, Alaska. They gave it
Supergrass.
Yeah, they gave us a shout out, Elastica, on social media. They were like, that's amazing, like on their Twitter. Yeah,
so what's this called? Is this just called
Britpop Choir
in but New York branch?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
so that was...
So we still do that.
And it's so much fun. It's a really good way of... no matter how bad your Mondays are, it's singing or, like, you know, just getting in a group and letting it out. And, you know, it all comes together. It's really, really fun.
Well, I'll put the details below for that Britpop choir, but that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really
great.
Good.
Cool.
Yeah, if anyone in New York that want to join.
So is it mainly expats that do it, or is
no,
it
it's
Americans
like 50,
as well?
It's like 50-50, really. It's
like a lot of French people, like Europeans, is like not just the, you know, UK people.
Yeah.
But a lot of Americans too.
Yeah, a lot of Americans. Yeah. Yeah. It's a really good crowd. Even if you can't sing, like, don't be shy. get in touch and yeah.
Nice.
If you're in New York,
yeah. And I suppose for you as well, it's not just the fun aspect, but that singing is helping you and helping rehabilitate.
Yeah, like, yeah, so it's a therapy. Yeah, we were really nervous when we had to do that gig last week.
Yeah.
Because it was like 250 people at the gig, so it was nice. It was you felt really good on stage after what I've been through.
To be able to stand up on stage and sing with a group of people after a year later, you couldn't speak.
Yeah.
That's a huge achievement.
That is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
That's fantastic. No, it's really, I'm really pleased to see brutal what you've gone through. I'm so sorry for, you know, and as I say, that's what you think. So, and I suppose it's for you being a football coach. It's like you do hear about like footballers that have just dropped dead, and it's like, like Mark Vivian Foe, and there's been people in recent years, isn't there?
Yeah.
And you think, Christ, but these people at the peak of their physical prowess.
Yeah.
And I suppose it must happen to loads of people around the world, but you don't.
Yeah.
You only tend to hear about it if it's famous people, which tends to be footballers.
Tessa Powell.
Yeah.
About like. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, brain cancer doesn't get much. It's like not got much funding, it doesn't get much coverage, it's like a very, because there's no remission with brain cancer, like, so it's kind of it's not as, you know, people, I don't think people are as aware of it as a disease.
And it's the number one child's
cancer,
brain cancer as well.
Goodness me.
All right. Being sporty and like athletic, I think, was a huge part of what helped Adrian like get through his treatment. And
it played a massive role, like, you know, just even trying to learn to play the guitar again, like, you know, I'm like, obviously I'm not gonna be, it's never gonna come back, my weakness on the right side, but
yeah,
I can only try and keep going. Yeah. Don't let it knock you.
Yeah. Cool. And then what about with work and things? You just then gradually going back to
I went back to work in September of last year. I'm not going to call it the fall.
autumn.
Yeah. On a part-time basis, and you know that was really hard. Coaching.
It's all about communication, isn't it?
It's all about communication. Yeah. I come back home some nights and I said, I can't do it, Rods. Because it completely drained me, and I'm just trying to find new ways to be able to coach. I have to have an agenda for every situation. I have to really plan. I could plan a session before, and you know I can adapt it a lot quicker. But you know, it's just adapting. You know, a new me sort of thing.
Yeah.
But
to have come through what you come through, though, and be out working again, and be out, not just working like sitting in a computer and just tapping away, but to be doing all the things that you were affected in, be speaking and moving and going and doing that. That's fantastic.
There's another thing that we should probably tell you about. Obviously, while this was all happening, I was like doubting myself whether I could go back to work or, you know. What am I going to do? I was like having, what am I going to do this like for work, and what am I going to do? Like, it's like, you know. And then I had an idea of, you know, I'm a soccer coach originally, football. Sorry.
Yeah.
I want to do something for kids with cancer, like, you know, bring a program, football program to like kids with cancer. And then we done a summer camp last year in August for it's a week-long camp, and we brought football to their program, so it's all of the kids there have got cancer, or a sibling have got cancer,
mum and dad has got cancer, anyone affected by cancer like directly.
Wow. And whereabouts is this New York?
Shelter Island,
so just outside
in Long Island.
Yeah, so there's a charity called Kids Need More, and Adrian like collaborated with them to do like a week-long soccer program for them, and the kids just loved it. They were like, oh my god, Coach Adrian's had chemo, he understands, he's seen what, like, and it was just it was brilliant. It was such an uplifting and inspiring like experience.
Wow,
awesome.
So then through that, we've created our own charity, so called We Can Kick It. So we've just launched it, actually, probably about a month ago. And we've got loads of events planned for this coming year. So basically, We Can Kick It provides for free for soccer programs to kids between 5 and 18. So obviously, we're visiting... a kid next month, actually. We're going to do a house visit. He's 6 years old, and he's got the exact same tumor as me, brain cancer. So we're going to do a house visit with, and he's got a twin brother, and you know, and the emails that I've got from it, like, we've done some sessions in Long Island, and you know, the emails we got, like, for the response,
the parents yeah, they're just like, even if it's not the kid that had, you know, had or has cancer, the brother or sister might have got anxiety, you know, like spending all their time going to hospital appointments or seeing their other half, like, siblings sick or whatever it may be. And they're just like, you know, the session you did with them, they came away so confident, they were like, loved it, they're like, look at me, you know. And that's what it's all about.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so while I was having my treatment, I was trying to write a business plan. And then luckily we got a pro bono work from the lawyers, and they, you know, I didn't think how much work it was involved in trying to set up a charity. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
And eventually we got the 501(c) confirmed
status, so you're like tax exempt and all that kind of like official.
So yeah, we're like, if anyone wants to get involved in the States, yeah, just reach out, and I'll give you the email address or the website and whatnot. But like, yeah, like, if any corporate companies want to, like, you know, want to give us some money to like run the programs,
yeah, happy come
days.
On,
happy days.
Great, that's brilliant, that's fantastic. So what was the charity's called? We Can Kick It.
Yeah, so it's wecankickit.org.
wecankickit.org, there you go, check it out. What fantastic, you know, obviously what an awful thing to have happened to you, but what an incredible thing to come out of it.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that was my, like, that was what we got me through treatment, I think, like, you know, because I didn't really like being at home, and I was like, okay, when I'm, you know, got the energy, I can like write a business plan, and then, you know, and then it formed from then, and like getting the social media, and, you know, so it's just, yeah, it's just come from collaborating with a number of charities, like in New York or the tri-state area, and yeah, I'm excited about it. Yeah,
it's fantastic, man. That's absolutely brilliant. That's great. And if Noel or Liam are listening, I want to throw us a few million quid.
As well.
So go on. So tell us about meeting.
Well,
Liam,
I think you should like.
Go on, then, Ross.
So Liam was doing like a secret gig at the McKendrick Hotel in New York, and it was right. Adrian was just before his last bout of chemo, and he was on a real low. And we saw it pop up on social media. It really lifted him. He was so excited, like, you know, over the moon. It's like this very intimate venue. Like, how many people?
It was
people?
Filmed for front and center.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah.
I think it was on Sky Arts, I think.
Yes.
It is a good name, isn't it? It's even bad, followed by John and Paul as well. Right, this one's called Universal Glimpses. What a clapping time. That'd be kind of amazing.
Something I can shout about. Oh Lord, don't let me down.
I was like, right, I'm going to put all my stalking skills to good ability. And I have a friend in London as well, and she works for like a PR agency, and she kind of knew someone who knew, I guess it was linked with the PR team that worked with Liam. And then by like stalker skills, I managed to find Debbie's email address. And so I just told them the story and how much Oasis had been such a huge part of like Adrian's, you know, recovery, speaking. And I just said, like, is there any chance, if you've got 5 minutes, if you could meet him? And she wrote back. She was amazing. She's so kind. And she's like, yep, you know, this is, you know, be here at this time. And after the show, we went backstage and they were like, you know, be quick because he's tired, he's just finished the gig and stuff. And like, he's my hero now. He's such a nice man. He spent so much time with us and he's so kind. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so I couldn't drink at the time, but when Liam Gallagher offers you a drink, you're not going to say no. So I was like,
we're about to do, is this in the backstage area?
Yeah, the backstage area. There was like probably about 30 people there, like in the backstage area. And he's, the amount of time that he spent with us, like that was, he didn't have to do that. It was like unbelievable. Like, really, so like, kind. You know, yeah.
And did he remember you from New York in 2011?
No. I actually, no. Well,
did you say, oh, we met?
He thought we were American, and yeah. I was like, I'm from North London. He said, are you Gunner? Like, it's just like, we started talking about like Man City and like, you know. And just football in general, like, you know, it's like, and the gig and whatnot. And he was asking me, that they were playing in Rough Trade in Brooklyn. Yeah. And so he's like talking to me about like, what's Williamsburg like? He'd never been there, whatnot. But like, he was just amazing. Yeah, we got some photos with him. He gave us a signed poster and we had a drink with him. Like, it was like... bucket list stuff, like
fantastic. So how long were you with him total then?
Probably about 15-20 minutes. Fantastic. And then he went to, when he left, he said, like, he walked and said, I'm shooting off now, and
good luck with your scan.
Yeah, so he was great. Like, thank you, Liam and Debbie. Yeah,
well done, Debbie. Yeah. That's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I was so grateful for Debbie because she got Liam to record a little
Oasis
podcast thing. But yeah, because it's so weird that when you email someone, you assume it's going to go to like 27 secretaries before it gets to the person. But I think Debbie's email, she's on it, isn't she?
The way that she's marketed Liam in 2017, like, he's that comeback.
Unbelievable.
It could have went the other way.
Yeah.
Like, but it's apparently he's going to record now. Like, in a couple of months. Like,
yeah. No, I think next week in LA. Yeah.
So that's like more recording. Like, I was surprised that. He was touring again, like in the States again this year. Yeah. So, I was like loving that because like Richard Ashcroft was announced. Like, we were loving like.
And the fact, because he's also, there was a few he cancelled, wasn't there, as well. So he's going to have to go back. I think he cancelled Boston, I think, did he?
Yeah, actually, I had a ticket for Philly as well, like, in New Transfer, and that got cancelled. But yeah. I got a refund from it.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I'm looking forward to next month. Yeah, I'll give you a gig review.
Yeah, there you go. We'll have to get a gig review. But you can say, oh, can we come and meet him again, please? He might be pushing your luck to try.
And Richard,
that would be cool.
Two for one.
Yeah, and do we think that they're going to come on stage together and do a track together?
I'd love that, but like, amazing, I don't know when. I think the first gig is in San Francisco. Yeah. I'm not sure, but I'm sure that'd be awesome.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
It's going to be amazing. Thomas, we haven't really talked about you. I mean, were you a big Oasis fan growing up? Or is this something...
Yeah, I was pretty into Britpop. The first time I'd seen Oasis was Glastonbury, so that was 2004, was it?
Okay.
Yeah, so that was my... And I was supposed to see them at, was it V Festival or Reading Festival, and that's when they...
2009?
Yeah, the second night. So I had tickets for that, and then they...
I was at that gig, but we didn't know each other.
You didn't know each other? Yeah. Oh, wow, that's one of those sort of...
Yeah, passing moments.
Yeah.
I remember being drunk, walking out of... Chelmsford, and
Snow Patrol
singing Champagne Supernova. I was like, me and my friend Paul, we are like not having it. We're like out of it.
Leave
it.
Slowly walking down the hall, faster than a cannonball. Where we were, when we were getting high. Someday you will find me caught beneath the light.
It was like, such a good line. Like, I think Biffy Clyro were playing and Ocean Colour Scene and then Oasis, I think.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was devastating, but
yeah. And then a couple of days later it's all over.
Yeah.
Some fruit was thrown or whatever happened and guitars and yeah, it's all done.
But like, at least we get to see them both worlds, like
Both. Double the value, you get to see Noel and Liam. So.
Well, it's like you know, it's been said by a few people on this, but you know, it's like your parents split up and then you get twice the Christmas presents, isn't it?
That's true, yeah. You know, good analogy.
Yeah, and it's also like, if you want to see Noel's version, then you can see Noel's version. If you want something that's a bit more rock and roll and a bit more stripped down and with it, and you know, obviously Noel's brilliant, like talking to the crowd, and you know, it's much more chilled out sort of affair, whereas Liam's a much more of rock and roll show.
Yeah, Noel's much more of a theatre setting, and then Liam's a bit more grimy, like you know, rock and roll and like, you know, heavy guitars. It's like the closest thing for the young listeners, like that didn't get to see Oasis, like it's going to see Liam is probably the next best thing.
Exactly,
like
and it feels like the band's with it now as well. Like when they first the first few gigs last year,
Glastonbury,
I think
right?
they were quite with it, whereas now it's like, I think the band are together now, they're all I think they're pretty much hit their stride now. But I'm very exciting, we're going to get more new music, which is fantastic.
I'm excited about that, like, because he obviously knows that it's probably good as well, like he wouldn't, like, because now he's like, okay, he probably could take 2 years off, but
so it's just, I think that it hit me. Did you listen to the interview we did with Mike Skinner, the podcast that just came out a few days ago?
No, I didn't actually.
Yeah,
I
haven't just, it's only on Spotify, but he basically, what it sort of dawned on me, it's like, well, yeah, his kids are growing up now. So it's like, you know, he's not doing, I think he was pretty much doing the school run, you know, quite a lot. Yeah. When Oasis weren't touring and things, he was doing the school run and getting involved in all that. But now his kids are all growing up, he's like, well, why not? Why not go on tour? There's nothing really keeping him.
He takes them on tour now.
I think if you're Gene or Lennon, you're like, do we fancy a trip to Amsterdam? I think we'll go to Amsterdam with Dad.
So, your dad is Liam Gallagher. It's a little
I know. Well, I know he said in interviews and things, how can he lecture them on, like, drugs or, like, the way they treat the opposite sex and things like that? It's like, you know what a
same
rogue
with
he's
Noel
been.
As well. Like, he set out outrageous things in the past when he was, like, you know, a bit more of a pisshead Noel.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Well, the consummate professional he is now.
Yeah.
No, good. Good. All right, well, guys, thank you so much for your time today. Much appreciated.
No worries. Pleasure.
And just remind us again of that, the charity is?
We Can Kick It. We are on social media at We Can Kick It. We've got a Facebook page, We Can Kick It. Just get in touch. I'll give you the details.
Awesome.
www.wecankickit.org.
.org. There we go.
So if you're in the Tri-State area or in America in general, just reach out if you're interested.
Fantastic. Adrian, Roz, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And we always end with an Oasis song. Which Oasis song are we picking?
Oh, okay, so...
Well, it's got to be, do you know what I mean, hasn't it? The song that brought you back out of the...
Yeah, I think so, but like...
Or is there something else?
Maybe Talk Tonight. Because, obviously, I couldn't speak. And but yeah, like, do you know what I mean? Or Talk Tonight, what do you think?
I don't know. Both are good, so.
Adrian, Roz, thanks so much for your time, and we're going to play out. James in the future is going to decide whether it's Talk Tonight or Do You Know What I Mean? So thank you very much.
Thank you
very much, James.
But I'll be back another day. I want to talk tonight until the morning light. But how you save my life. I want to talk tonight. But how you save my life.
Wow, so I hope you guys really enjoyed that, and what an awful thing to have happened to him, but incredible to have come out the other side of it, and what
to be bringing such amazing positivity with this charity and thing, helping out these kids and who've experienced cancer. It's amazing. And thank you so much to Adrian and Roz for taking the time. And I know it's hard for Adrian, the condition that he's got now means he struggles to put words together and things. And so for him to sit and chat to me for pretty much an hour, it was tough for him, and I applaud him for doing it. So thanks so much, guys. And I'd say, and please do check out wecankickit.org. And if you're in New York, come along to the Britpop Choir. Sounds like really good fun. All right, so let's have a chat about Ain't Got Nothing. Now, first off, let's just jump back into the chat with Adrian again, because I did touch and Ain't Got Nothing with him. So back to Oxford with me and Adrian. The other thing I'm going to do in next episode is the A to Z of Ain't Got Nothing. Do you know that track? Is there anything particularly that you are interested in or would like to say anything about Ain't Got Nothing?
Ain't Got Nothing.
Dig Out Your Soul.
It's a good track. It's not great. It's a Liam track, right?
Yeah.
Liam wrote it. It's just, it could be a B-side, I think. It's just an album track. But I like to Dig Out Your Soul. I thought, Bag It Up. It was a great tune. It was a bit, bit funky, the lyrics and whatnot. And the turn-in, Waiting for the Rapture. I'm Out of Time.
I think it drops off significantly. Dig Out Your Soul. I think it starts off really well, but then it drops off. I think Ain't Got Nothing, it's a funny one. In most bands, you've got a songwriter who all the band writes the songs.
Yeah.
But it's just weird. Oasis, because they sort of had got to that status, you don't have the drummer from whatever band's going to write a song.
Yeah.
And it's not really at the level, but hey, fine, that's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas something like Ain't Got Nothing, I just don't think in most bands, if one of the band members say, I've written a song and it's this, they probably go, nah, you're all right. We'll bin that one.
Yeah.
Because there's not much to it. But I think it's got a certain charm because it is, yes, it's really, really simple and there's not much to it. But
I can't remember if they played it live.
They did play it live.
Dig
Out Your Soul tour.
Yeah, it was a good track live. I'd have to YouTube it and whatnot and see it, play it again. But yeah, I mean, it was a good track.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think it set out what Liam's songwriting was, really, that you had. I always lump it in with Meaning of Soul, because it's those two sort of tracks are both those Liam, they're only a couple of minutes long, they're pretty raw because there's not much to them, but they've got a bit of attitude.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I like Meaning of Soul more than Ain't Got Nothing, but Meaning of Soul was just 2 minutes, boom, the guitars everywhere,
But why not? That's the thing. I don't see most songs. I'm pretty much done after 2.5 minutes. You think, right?
Yeah.
That's done. Move on now. Move on. But then people feel the need to stick an extra verse, extra chorus.
Well, that happened on Be Here Now. Yeah. So
a little bit. I didn't mind Be Here Now as much, but yeah. I'm sorry to have sprung that a little bit on Adrian there, but there you go. Now, someone who had a bit more preparation time was Ryan Harvey, who is at the Harvey Boys. So he's done a couple of these for us and is absolutely brilliant. So over to you, Ryan.
Hi, James. This is Ryan Harvey at the Harvey Boys with an audio message for Oasis A to Z, Ain't Got Nothing. Not a great deal. Track 9 on Dig Out Your Soul, written by Liam. There isn't much about this song, so I think it was played on the Dig Out Your Soul tour. They actually played it live. All the live performances are pretty much the same, nothing special about them. It's only 2 minutes, and it's probably a good thing for Chris Sharrock's, just the mental kind of constant drumming for any much more than 2 minutes would probably do you in.
When I listened to it just now, what struck me was it starts like the end of a song. It's certainly the outro and the start are the same on this. So it's "Ain't Got Nothing on Me Anymore," which just sounds like the end of a song, really. What we do know on the internet, the general consensus seems to be the song is about the Liam getting beaten up in the hotel bar in Munich, Germany in December 2002, and ranting about the fact he gets all the blame for it, because, I guess because he's the famous one.
One interview with Noel says, "It's not enough for that your brother is moved to write a song about it and say, 'I am innocent.' You don't believe him." And Noel says, "What, are you effing serious? He's a born liar. I wasn't there, but I ask you, do you think Liam was helping clear away the glasses or assisting an old lady upstairs when it all kicked off? I'll leave that for you to decide." Great stuff. So the NME review literally just says it's a rehash of The Meaning of Soul from the previous album. Not, I guess, just with the banging drums. So written by Liam, and you can't find a lot of information about this song. I did do a bit of Googling for some interviews from 2008, so obviously we'll take these at face value. One with Liam saying, "I wrote that on acoustic guitar, man. I just sat there one day. I can't even effing change a string, man. If my guitar goes, I've got to get someone to change it. I'm totally winging it, mate. So I sat there and I was like three strings on my guitar and I was going, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Then someone fixes strings and that was it, done." I can imagine, maybe, yeah, someone, you know, someone like Gen would then pick it up and turn it into something, but it is just, it's that. Which does feature a bar chord, the way they play it, so yeah, maybe if Liam did have some crooked guitar, he came up with that as kind of riff in general. The chorusy bit, which is just one chord. And then sort of changes key a little bit, maybe. And then back into it. So I can imagine Liam writing something like Songbird, which is two chords. And the amount of time, which I love, is just kind of playing around with one, you know, part of the chord. So you can imagine maybe sitting there and doing that. So there is a Dig Out Your Soul documentary on YouTube, and it gets the briefest of mentions. Of course, Liam, as I predicted before watching it, just sort of says, "Oh yeah, feel great singing it. It's just mental."
I love it. I fucking love it. It's rocking, man. You've done it. That should have been on the last one, though.
And then Andy, interestingly, goes on to say it could have been the single.
I'm recording it then going, "This is the first single." But it's never sounded this good, though.
This documentary is just overdubbed with the voices. It's almost like they put that bit on the wrong song. But, you know, maybe if Andy Bebop can confirm whether he thought Ain't Got Nothing was first single worthy, I wouldn't personally. So yeah, personally, it was fine. It's a piece of music and yeah, maybe a very short way to go and get a pint at the gig. But other than that, not much more really to say. Thanks, James.
Till next time.
So thank you so much, Ryan, for doing that. That's absolutely brilliant. I think you've covered the vast majority of stuff there is to say on this song, but I think there's a little bit more meat on the bones that we can pick at. Firstly, let's just clarify. Yes, it is a Dig Out Your Soul track, which was the last album. It is track number 9. But by the sounds from that previous little clip of interview where he says it should have gone the last one, sounds like it had been written beforehand. So maybe it was around... Well, if it was possibly in for Don't Believe the Truth, then it may well have been around sort of 2004, 2005 to be available on that album. But yeah, it's one of those things that he's obviously been kicking around and it's finally made its way onto Dig Out Your Soul. So lyrically, let's just read through. So it goes, "They got nothing on me anymore. They got nothing on you. I don't care what they say anymore. All I want is the truth.
Out on bail to unveil, here's a song, sing along. They got nothing for me anymore, they got nothing on you. I don't care what they say anymore, all I want is the truth. Out on bail to unveil, here's a song, sing along. Watch my style, pick a place, wipe the smile from your face. Okay, so if it is about the Munich incident, then obviously there's one very clear point about that, which is out on bail. So yes, that's a clear point that yes, because he was out on bail at the time. And then, yeah, then they got nothing on me anymore. They got nothing on you. I know he's being interviewed at the time about how, yeah, he had nothing to do with it. And so, yeah, so they got nothing on me. You know, it's like, it wasn't me, copper. You got nothing on me. And then all I want is the truth. He's put, yeah, he wants the truth to come out from this incident that he wasn't, yeah, he wasn't involved with it. The other lines in there, like, here's a song, sing along. I don't really think have anything to do with that. I think that's just a handy line that he's picked. And here's a song, sing along. The way he sings it there, you know, the most obvious sort of here's a song, sing along you'd think would be from Sergeant Pepper. The singer's going to sing a song and he wants to sing along. But just the way he sings it in that sort of sarcastic, here's a song, sing along, it kind of reminds me of In Bloom by Nirvana. All I want is the truth is obviously, you know, give me some truth, John Lennon, which I think has been the basis of a good number of Liam songs, both in Oasis, BDI and solo. And one of the things I really like about this track is I think that, for something that does just get in and get it done with, it goes through a few little interesting phases. You know, you have that sort of breakdown in the middle where there's kind of shouting going on in the background, which is really interesting. So let's have a bit of that. If anyone's got the technology to actually isolate that and sort of hear what they were actually shouting about, that'd be really good to know. Also, picking up again what Ryan said about the chords. So what he's doing is sort of A, B, F sharp effectively all the way through the verse element. But it's like he's playing a fifth in there as well. So it's A5, B5, F sharp 5, basically all the way through. And then in the chorus, it's E, E7, E, E7. That out on bail to unveil is just E to E7, then E to E7, which, you know, the E to E7 is like a Beatles sort of move to go to that seventh chord, which is great. And then what I really like is, yeah, that when definitely lifts the song up a notch is that Watch My Style, Pick a Place, the way it just does that key change there. So it's going G to F and G to F, which I think is really cool. There's something really... that change is just a bit out of the ordinary, and I think that the switching between the two chords back and forth, it's very simple, but there's almost it's almost like an aggression about them. There's a goading about it, which I really like. It's something like a sneer about it that I think is great, and it's so Liam. Yeah, and then the outro there, it doesn't hang about. We just get back to the verse again. And then all I want is the truth. And then we just, boom, stop it, which is really cool. It's a really nice way to end the song. And as I said in that chat with Adrian, if a song's only meant to be 2 minutes, just make it 2 minutes. That's fine. That's all you need. generally, I really like it. I think it is that it's not Slide Away. It's not Don't Look Back in Anger, but it is a really great little Liam song. Let's get into your comments about it. The one comment I won't add it in again here because I put it into the recent best of episode 1 to 15. But the interview I did episode 6 with Joel Dickman. The American punk musician guy, he picked this out from all those tracks that I'd picked out for him to have a listen to, and this is one of the ones he picked out as really standing out for him as having that something different about it, which was really cool, which is really interesting. And so yeah, go back and check that out. So as always, I did a poll on it, and the response was as follows. 5 out of 5 got 6%, 4 out of 5 got 16%, 3 out of 5 got 45%, and 2 out of 5 got 33%. So it ended up being just shy of 3 out of 5. So it was ahead of A Quick Peep and Get Off Your High Horse Lady, but less than Probably All in the Mind. I'd probably put it ahead of Probably All in the Mind, to be fair, but that's just me. And so what were your responses? So Jim Regan, who is at JBone72, said, to be honest, I had to go and listen to it again. Not bad, though. I like the drums. Yeah, as Ryan touched upon, there's really good sort of insistent drums all the way through. And probably Chris was quite pleased. It was only a couple of minutes. I've All I Need, at Supernova Dragon, said, that's how I'd rate it, actually. Probably All in the Mind is better than this meh track, as far as I'm concerned. Nick, who is at Oasisography, said, very forgettable for me, proven by the fact that I just had to listen to it because I couldn't for the life of me remember how it went. No song deserves a zero, so it's a one from me. Amy, who is at AmyF_spot, said, I'm going to go with one as well, as I have no idea what it sounds like. I'll look it up and maybe I'll change my mind. Can I change a vote once cast? And I told her, no, you need to up a new Twitter account and vote again. And she said, too much effort. Can't remember the only account I have, much less additional ones. Well, it'll probably be a one, so I'm sticking with it. And then she did go and listen to it and she said, oh, hell, I know this song. I'm unofficially going with 3 because there are some good rhymes and I don't skip it when it comes on my shuffle. Gary, who is at GazzaF83, gave it a 2.3 and then said, sorry, not having it. Stop it with these point somethings. You pick a number, that's it. My Big Mouth, who is at my_big_name, said, Meaning of Souls, well better. Meaning of Souls, a tune. And he said, used LG's Morning Glory vocal to emphasize the word well. Ah, okay. Well, Ivan Gronsky, who is at MCFCRI, said, one of the worst Oasis songs. Dig Out Your Soul was strong up to that moment. And the Andersons, who are at Andersons Boston, said, agreed, totally forgettable. My Big Mouth came back and said, ain't got nothing bad to say about Liam or the song, but it's not one of his best. Fits in nicely on Dig Out Your Soul, but I preferred I Believe in All and Boy with the Blues. Jacopo Lagomarsino said, I like the song, even if it sounds a bit unfinished to me. That's why I gave it a 4 out of 5. Zach's drumming is good here. Chris Park, who is at Park1_Chris, love the bass on this track, raw and aggressive tune. If you base songwriting as a reflection on the writer, then this perfectly sums Liam up. Love it. Jen, who is at JNRXING, loved the song, but this video performance always gives me a headache. And that's and then she linked a clip to Ain't Got Nothing Live at Wembley Arena. Michael Hart, who is at What a Mind Blast, said, it's okay, it sounds a bit laboured, the drumming's good. Parker Chimp, who is at Empire Thompson, said, my least favourite Liam Penn tune. Do like its heavy feel, though, and the driving drum beat. Think there were better songs floating around that could have gone onto the album instead. Boy with the Blues is a prime example. Niall Collins, who's at Coligno, says, it's a bit shit, isn't it? Sounds like it took about as long to write as it does to listen to, and they put zero effort into the arrangement. And BRFC, who is at MarkCrabtree17, said, I like it. It's not the best thing they've done, but it's a solid 7 out of 10. But agree, the Boy with the Blues is a belter. Neil Stradion said, one from me. Couldn't even remember the lyrics, so it's not a judgment of LG's writing, but the tune is poor. On a positive note, it's better than Soldier On. Richard Bowes, who is at Arbos81, said, it's okay. The drumming and banshee wails are good. Not really worth waiting 6 years for. And My Big Mouth came back and said, it's like Liam doing the Stooges. Dan Best said, I don't like it. Natty, who is at Cast's Shadow, said, objectively, this is rather average song, but the drumming is hypnotic, so I actually like it a lot. And Louise Amaral, who we heard from earlier, said, ain't got nothing bad to say about it, but I'm Out of Time is the peak of Liam's inspiration on this album. Masterpiece. So thank you all so much for that. One of the points there that was raised by a couple of people was, you know, would Boy With The Blues have been better, or I Believe In All have been better? So yeah, so that's the question I always ask, is should it have been the album or not? Should it have been a single? Should it have been what? I don't agree with what Andy Bell said, that it could have been a first single. I mean, I can imagine in the studio as they're putting it together, you would have thought, yeah, this sounds great. You can imagine it through the studio speakers, it would have sounded pretty awesome. And you think, yeah, this would have been a brilliant song to come back with. Actually, in reality, no, I don't think it should have been a single. Should it have been an album track? I'm fine with it being an album track. As I've said a few times, I think Dig At Your Soul drops off significantly after the first sort of four or five tracks, and this is one of the later tracks. So it's an example of, you know, one of the songs that does signify a drop in quality on that album. It could have been a B-side. It could have been a BDI track. Maybe if it was held back for BDI, it probably would have sounded pretty good on that first BDI album. But I think as it is, ultimately, I'm happy with it being on the album there, within the mix of tracks it is. A cool thing about it is it's one where we have a demo. Not many Oasis tracks we do have a demo available, but in this case we do. And it is a demo that Liam sings, obviously, because it's a Liam Penn song. So the demo isn't massively different, but it is a bit different. So let's have a little listen to that. So I don't know for definite, but it sounds to me like maybe that's a Gem recorded demo. Maybe Gem's helped him out with it. But yeah, nice to hear. It's always good to hear how these songs sort of develop over time. And as Ryan pointed out in his little bit there, it was played live quite a bit. It was actually played live 93 times in 2008 and 2009. The first time it was played was at Black Island Studios in London, which was the Dig Out Your Soul warm-up gig, which was the first gig with Chris Sharrock, and it was the effectively what was known as the Standing on the Edge of the Noise gig. So let's have a little bit of that. And the last time it was played was on May the 12th in 2009 in Porto Alegre in Brazil. So it's interesting they dropped it from the set for the rest of the tour. So they didn't play at the Wembley Stadium gigs in 2009, didn't play at the Eden Sessions, Benicassim, any of those later ones. It was dropped before that, so it's quite interesting. And I ain't got nothing more to say about that. If you'd like to send over your views on Ain't Got Nothing, then that's absolutely fine. I happily play them in a future episode. So do feel free to fire that over to oasispod@gmail.com. Similarly, if you have any views on any of the other tracks that we've covered so far, the last one being Aquarius, then obviously feel free to fire that over. Next up will be Alive, which is, you know, an early demo. So, I'd be very interested to hear what people say about that, because it's... It's one of those very early Oasis songs. It was actually only ever released in that demo format as a B-side. So I would be very interested to hear what you guys say about Alive. So that will do it for this episode of the Oasis Podcast. Thank you all so much for listening and for subscribing and liking and all that sort of stuff that you wonderful people do. As ever, the main and the most thanks obviously go to our patrons who put your money where your mouth is. As I'm not going to go and thank everyone individually now because there's just too many to do, but we'll pick out individual ones as we've been doing. And so this week I'd particularly like to thank Ryan Harvey for doing that fantastic breakdown of Ain't Got Nothing for me. So thank you, Ryan. You can become a patron and support the show at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where I post articles by myself and Richard and Kyle. And you can support the show from as little as $1 per month. So yeah, please do, as it makes a huge difference. Please follow on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Oasis Podcast. Email me with audio messages or views or whatever you want to at oasispod@gmail.com. T-shirts are available at TeePublic, and please subscribe and review on iTunes. And just a reminder, please do, if you can, head over to britishpodcastawards.com and vote for the Oasis Podcast. As ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, stay young.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.